Welcome, welcome. You're listening to our podcast, Two Massage Therapists in a Microphone. My name is Mark. I'm a registered massage therapist, registered kinesiologist here in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. We're coming off of the Canadian Massage Conference. We were there Wednesday. Well, we set up Wednesday, but it started Thursday, Friday, Saturday, Sunday. Then we had two post-conference courses that were 2 days long, and those just wrapped up yesterday. And it's been... confused of what day of the week it is. It's been a long go, but I'm not going to lie. I'm still buzzing. And everyone that I talked to that was at the conference, they're all still buzzing.
I
sent out a message. I'm like, Listen, the high you're experiencing now will last for a while. Your energy will be contagious. You have been warned.
So, people are still buzzing. I got four really, really wonderful messages today from people who are just kind of now digesting everything they took in over the weekend. And I got like two people who messaged me that said, Mark was absolutely right. Like, I can't believe how I feel right now. I had one person say to me, you know, I'm super antisocial. I don't go to these events. I don't take a lot of continuing education courses. You know, I'd prefer to do one-on-one training or read research. And she said, after being there, she goes, I was walking around making new friends everywhere I went. I was smiling at everyone. One of our volunteers sent a message saying, you know, how much we made her feel appreciated and how excited she was and how she wants to come back. I had someone else message me saying, like, how do I get involved? Like, it was just crazy. But unlike Mark, who is still buzzing, I hit the freaking wall, guys. I am so tired. I'm not making any sense.
You know why I'm still buzzing, though? A big part of it. I'm editing a whole bunch of videos. I'm throwing together all these pictures, and I'm doing all this stuff still.
Yeah.
And so I'm still in the excitement of it all. And then one day.
Oh, when you
one
hit,
day next month,
when
it'll,
you
it'll
hit
drop
this
down.
Wall where I am, like if you listen to my voice, it still hasn't fully returned. It was a lot of excitement, and I'm just not even making sense.
So if you missed it, you missed out on an event. It's okay because it's a yearly event. And we're going to be in Calgary in June in 2024. We're moving this fucker all around the country.
Yay.
And we've got a real cool guest sitting on this other side of our screen today. We got a serious topic. Hot, serious topic. I love these topics, but I'm not going to lie. People hate us for these topics, and the people that hate us are the people we're going to be talking about. But whatever, because this shit needs to be talked about, and it needs to be heard.
Yeah, and I think that if anybody does hate us for talking about it, I'd just like to remind you all that
you
everything we're talking about is truthful. We're not spreading any lies. We're not trying to talk shit about anyone, but... sometimes the shit does need to be talked about.
Or maybe it doesn't, but I just feel the need to do so.
Yeah, well, so does our guest, Anne. So I'm going to introduce Anne a little bit and then let her introduce herself. She is a massage therapist and was teaching at a college and recognized some major gaps in learning and approached the administration saying, hey, here's some suggestions for the curriculum. And she was basically just shut down. You know, don't worry about it. This is how we do things. And, you know, being newer to teaching, she was like, all right, this is how we do things, but she could see something was wrong, and unfortunately she was not wrong, and a large majority of the students were unsuccessful with their licensing exams and reached out to her and said, we just didn't get the education we needed. And she already saw this coming and wanted to talk about just why administration aren't listening to the instructors and the therapists who are doing the work and
or
a whole bunch of other...
explore these ideas. Because we don't know why.
We don't know why.
We can just throw shit at the wall and see what sticks, but... I think hearing from the outside, from seasoned therapists, also from people that have been involved in education, I think what we say makes a difference. At least it makes sense to people that are listening to it, and it brings a different perspective than, you know, what you're confronted with most of the time. If that even made any fucking sense. Maybe I am coming down from the conference.
Maybe you are. No, I'm kidding. Well, Anne, I know you also experienced a lot of other just... very negative stuff. And I'm sorry about that because teaching is awesome. And I know this is something that you went into because you have a passion to share knowledge and teach future RMTs. And it sucks that you got into this and it turned out the way it did. So I'm going to let you introduce yourself a little bit about, you know, who you are as a therapist and why you decided to take a teaching role to begin with. And
yeah,
then we can hear
I'm
about
really
your experience.
About.
So my name is Anne for a little bit of protection from myself or the community that I live in. This wasn't actually my first teaching position. I actually taught for a number of years in Toronto in the private school system, which has its own challenges. And I don't know, I love being a massage therapist. I've been doing it coming on 9 years now. And I really wanted to give back. I am a nerd. I love studying. I love helping students study, finding where they need correction in their own skills so they can become better therapists. And also it's really encouraging to work with the future RMTs. They're at one point, they're your students, but eventually they're going to be your colleagues. Mm-hmm. And it's a really unique experience to watch them grow as students. And then a couple of years later, they're RMTs and they're still messaging you. And they're like, I love my practice. I love my job, or I hate my job. Why am I doing this? And it's just like a really fulfilling ongoing process. There's also a part of me that teaches because I understand how demanding our job can be physically. And I like that balance between, you know, days where you're still an RMT, a massage therapist, but you're teaching as opposed to just always being hands-on with your clients. So I really enjoy that mix in my week. It keeps it exciting, or not that our job isn't exciting, but
I hear you. I mean, I started working at a college in probably my second or third year of practice. Like, I wasn't even in that long, but just exactly for that reason, just to mix it up a little bit, to give back. And it was super reward. I was the clinic supervisor. I wasn't even really like in the classroom. I was in the clinic, but it was nice to get to share some knowledge with these future therapists. And, you know, the ones that are already in clinic, like, they're now working on real people and they're super pumped. And yeah, I really love doing it to mix up the week and to not be hands-on all the time.
Why do you guys want to give back? What about this makes you want to give back? Just out of curiosity. And I'm not saying I don't want to give back, but I'm curious as to why you guys, and I'm pointing, you know, you guys.
I don't know if I know how to answer that question.
Well, let's explore it. Why do you want to give back?
Well, I can just say that, I mean, for me, I'm looking at it like, if there aren't people who want to help to better the profession in any way, however that is, you know, there's people who do advocacy, there's people who, you know, work for the college or who, you know, sit on council or who are part of the association or teach continuing education. If there's nobody willing to do these things, then are there going to be massage therapists? Are we going to get better? Or is this just going to fizzle away? And in that case, that's just not good for anybody.
So you're doing it because it's a role that needs to be filled, and you're just like, what the fuck? Why not me?
Not what the fuck, why not me? It's, I can do that, so why wouldn't I? But I have that outlook on almost anything. If I can help someone, why wouldn't I?
I get it.
I agree.
Why do you want to give back?
There's a moment in teaching that I absolutely love, whether you're supervising in clinic or you're working in the classroom, and they can be working on a technique or an assessment or whatever, and they've been working on it for weeks, and then suddenly it clicks. And the look on their face when they finally understand a concept is just amazing in my point of view. And all of that studying that they've been doing, it finally falls into place and they understand. And their face just lights up. And I really love that moment. And that's probably my favorite moment in teaching and why I want to keep doing it, because it's just so awesome to see them grow and see them develop.
I think teaching is something that some people just naturally really love to do anyway. I can remember when I was a massage student and we were studying, I can't remember, but it was I want to say it was like neurological conditions, and we were studying for treatment OP. Mm-hmm. And there was one girl in my class who just like could not understand the concepts. Like it was not that she didn't know the techniques, but she couldn't figure out for the life of her how to put together a cohesive treatment and have a number of techniques represented. And so I remember offering her, like, let's meet at the school on Saturday. They had a room open where you could go and study. So let's meet at the school. Let me see what I can do. And I remember sitting with her, just as Anne was telling the story, I thought of it. I remember sitting with her and I was trying to explain, like, okay, this condition, tell me what's going on here. Okay, tell me what our goals are. What do we want to do? And, you know, tell me all of the different things you can think of that would help to accomplish that. And we just went over all of these things. And at the end of it, I watched her go, like, this is actually so easy. Like, everything. This is so easy. And I felt so happy for her, but also it was like very rewarding for me. Like I made this make sense to her. And it is a feeling I really like. So yeah, part of it was probably selfish too, where I was like, I can do something that I like and I think I'm pretty good at.
We had Christine Sutherland, co-founder of Sutherland Chan, at the Canadian Massage Conference, and she taught a course. And her and Grace also taught a course together, which was really cool because they hadn't done that in, I don't know,
decades,
right? And I was recording Christine's class, and she started off by saying, I'm only going to teach you guys this stuff if you promise me to do one favor. You teach this to somebody else. And I thought, that was fucking cool because I know a whole bunch of educators that love to be on the pedestal. Do you know what I mean? I'm the person. You have to come to me. I'm the one with all the knowledge. And she's like, listen, I ain't going to teach this to you guys unless you decide that you're going to go teach this to other people. This stuff needs to just be spread. And I thought that was a really cool fucking message coming from a really hip lady, man.
It's not surprising coming from her, though. Her keynote speech, the theme of it was taking it to the streets. And she was, and at first when she told us that, we were both of us, like, we literally chuckled like that. We're like, what does she mean by that? But when she sent me her idea, I was like, oh, this makes so much sense. So her whole thought process was that as massage therapists, we actually have this skill and this knowledge that can be beneficial for just about anyone. And she said that what she would love to do is when she had a patient who either was maybe medically fragile in some way or pregnant or elderly or, you know, parents with toddlers or infants, she would want the family to actually be involved in what she was doing so she could show them techniques that they could use in between treatments with her where they could actually use massage to help her, their family. And that's just her personality. Like if you have knowledge, share it with everybody.
So are we saying then that not all of the educators that find themselves in formal education are doing it for the reasons that you guys said about the give back? Is that part of the problem? I know there's probably a lot of problems and we're going to get to them, but I just kind of, since we're on this idea of the give back, do you think the idea of the give back is lacking in some of those people that hold very important positions that influence all of these future RMTs or hopefully future RMTs?
So from two different points of view, I would say the private college that I was working in, part of the issue that the school had is that their pay was terrible for the teachers and for like the clinical instructors, where it's not really like a teaching role, but like more supervision. The pay was terrible across the board. And the teachers that were there instructing weren't there for the money. They were there because they love the profession and they love to teach. They definitely were not there for the money. So on that front, I would say they 100% had the best interest of the students. In the public college, the pay is different depending on what you're hired at, what level that you're hired at. And I can't speak for certain of those teachers because I only met maybe two of them. From what I gathered, the teachers still loved being there. It was the administration that was really looking at the bottom line, so not hiring enough people, giving enough hours back. And they weren't RMTs, so they had no idea what we were doing. So you have this contrast of like RMTs running a program and then just like your HR people running a program, and they kind of clash. If you don't really understand a profession, it's very hard to create a program that's going to address all the needs of the students. I don't know if that makes sense.
Do you think it's a mistake then to have admin that don't, I don't know, that don't have the RMT background or?
No.
I don't know if they necessarily need an RMT background because they're overseeing multiple programs. They can't have multiple registrations. However, when your hired professional that you have coming to instruct students or supervise students give you feedback about the actual profession and what actually happened, you should really listen to them because you hired a professional. And if you're not going to listen to their opinion, what's the point of us being there?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's where the problem really lies. I mean, you and I have both worked in private schools, and that is an issue. Those of us that were working in the office, we don't need to know everything about the program. But if we have one of the instructors coming in saying, this is how this should be, then yeah, then we need to be listening more to them because we have no idea. We have no idea. But that's what I was saying right at the beginning is why wouldn't the admin of a school listen? Because ultimately in the end, they end up looking very bad when the results of the licensing exam are so, so low. Like it obviously there was a problem at the school level if a vast majority of the students didn't pass on their first attempt.
You know, a lot of schools, they have like an advisory committee
mm-hmm.
where, what's it called?
It was an
professional advisory committee, something like that. I don't know what it's called, what the formal name of it is.
I just remember getting emails to be invited to the advisory meetings. I actually don't know if there was another name.
So basically, a school would have an advisory committee, which is going to be made up of a bunch of people, professionals that are in that field, and they will meet and they will advise the school on, you know, the things that are happening currently in the industry, what it's like to be actually out there working, and therefore these are things that you might want to consider when creating a program or making amendments to a program and so on. And I feel it's really interesting because at least the places that I was working at, I feel like the admin staff held on to whatever these advisory committees would say so hard. They're like, yes, we're going to take this into consideration. Meanwhile, they've got their own advisory committee of their own staff that are actually still working in the field and everything
that
else.
That are dealing with their students.
Exactly. And it's like you're ignoring the people that are there doing the work for you with your students and also have all of the same knowledge of the industry for the information that's only coming from those out in the industry. It's really strange to me. Or maybe I got that all wrong, but that's the way it feels right now.
It did feel like it. Well, and why don't you tell us a little bit about your experience, like how things happened and the steps you took to try to make things better for your students?
So I was working in the clinic, and by the time the students start massaging the public in the clinic, they have been in the program for an entire year. And by the time you start working on the public, you should have a general idea of how to do like your just like your basic relaxation massage. Like you might not have like higher level skills like frictioning or trigger point, but you can do your efflage and your petrissage and do your intake with a client to make sure they're safe to get a massage.
Right.
And I'm going around and I'm listening to the students, and their intake is very lacking. They're missing a lot of like the critical points in order to get informed consent.
Mm-hmm.
Their question or to ask the client if they can do assessments is missing. Their assessments themselves are very flawed. And I recognize that these are students and, you know, they're not even graduated yet, but when they're doing range of motion, they do one plane and then that's it. So they just do flexion of the shoulder and then move on. They don't do all the ranges.
Right.
So I don't know if they weren't taught how to do it properly, or like most students, they forget what they were taught. They get to clinic and they only do half the work. So I started approaching some of the students and I just started asking them questions. Why did you choose this assessment? Or when you're massaging, why are you doing this technique? What's the origin insertion of this muscle? And the students couldn't answer my basic questions. And I found that really disconcerting, because by the time you're massaging the public, you should know your anatomy. And if a teacher asks you what muscle you're on, you should be able to answer the question.
Mm-hmm.
I was then reprimanded because I was asking the students questions. And this was my first like kind of slap to the face. Like, what? Like, what do you mean?
Wait. What do you mean you were reprimanded? Like, did a student go and tattletale on you? So what does this look like? Who approaches you and what do they say? Because my assumption would be, as a clinic supervisor, it is your job to intervene when a student doesn't know the material.
Can we pause for a second just so we can give anyone that's listening a background as to what really the role of the clinic supervisor is?
Sure.
And what student clinic is all about. So student clinic, in my mind, has a couple purposes. One, to allow the student to now work with the general population, real people that have real issues, versus all of this you know, pseudo stuff and fake stuff that you're doing in class. Mm-hmm. Cool. That's the first part. It allows them to sharpen whatever skills they're learning in their classroom. So I was a clinic supervisor as well, along with teaching and running a program. And in my mind, student clinic should run like this. And most, I assume, do. Maybe this is a horrible assumption. That general public comes in, they pay a reduced price for a massage. That's one of the reasons why they come. They recognize they're at an educational institution. So they know that there's probably going to be people that come in, like the supervisor, maybe other students that will observe and ask questions and all the rest of it. So one of the things that I would always do is I would go into everyone's cubicle while they're doing their massage at some point in this 1 hour massage that they're providing. I would go in and I'd ask the student a whole bunch of questions, right? Because I want to know, did you do an intake? What was that intake about? What were your findings from your assessments? What assessments did you perform? What's the overall goal of the treatment today? What's the treatment plan moving forward? All that kind of stuff. And I'm asking these questions while they're working with their client. Now, if a student is ever struggling to answer these questions or is just answering things completely off balance and incorrect, obviously the goal is not to embarrass the student in that moment and make them seem incompetent in front of the client. But this is going to lead to a conversation at some point. So to me, it's very normal that I would walk into a room and I would say, you know, I'd greet the clients and I would greet the therapist and I would ask, okay, so what are we working on today? And they would explain to me what they're working on. Then I would ask, okay, well, what types of assessments were you doing and what made you want to do those assessments and what were those assessment findings? And so then they would kind of tell me all these things that they were doing. And I'd say, okay, well, what's your overall clinical impression? They'd tell me what that is. And then I might ask them questions about what they're doing in that moment, right? So if they're doing, say, I don't know, like they're doing knuckle stripping to the quadratus lumborum, right? To the lumbar spine area. So I might start asking them a little bit, okay, so like, tell me a little bit about this muscle that you're working on right now. Like, can you identify the muscle that you're working on right now? I might even ask them, can you tell me what the actions of this muscle are or where it inserts, where it attaches, all that kind of stuff. Like, this is all normal stuff that happens in student clinic. At least that's the way I ran student clinic. And I'm assuming that this is the same way you ran student clinic, correct?
So when I ran student clinic at the private college, that's exactly what we did. And they were graded every single clinic. We had a rubric and they had to, it was like 1, 2, 3, like just very, very basic, but they were getting marked on something at all times. Public college, it's a different title for the role of being in clinic. And in that role, you are what's called support staff for the college.
Okay.
Versus a faculty member, which is an instructor. And I later discovered that as a support staff, there was language that you were not allowed to use because that was under the faculty job title or the instructor job title.
Can you give me examples of this?
The first night I was in clinic and I hadn't learned these rules yet, I'm asking a student questions and I wasn't trying to trick her. I just wanted to know, what technique are you using on this muscle right now? Is there another muscle that refers into this area? And that was frowned upon because I was asking them questions and I was teaching. And apparently teaching is not allowed by support staff. You can only teach, quote unquote, if you are an instructor.
So you were literally there to just supervise.
Yes, I was a glorified babysitter.
So you were reprimanded for teaching because all of us here thought that that's what you're supposed to do when you supervise.
So I guess I like right from the beginning, I didn't completely understand what my job description was. And I've never worked in an environment where there's a union. And if you work outside of your job description, you can get in trouble. Or not like get in trouble, but you're not supposed to.
So let me ask you a question then. For example, part of being the clinic supervisor is I saw the role as well. So at the end of the treatment, a student does their clinic documentation. And then I would go through the clinic documentation to make sure like you're documenting thoroughly and we want to understand what we're doing and why we're doing and blah, 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 blah. So I would sit down with them after and go through the documentation and I grade it, right? So I take the red pen out and I grade it. Stuff. So is that something else that you're not supposed to be doing?
So they had what's called chart audits. So everything was online. So they did all their charting online. So you would watch them chart on their computer and they got maybe like one or two chart audits a term, not every single shift. And they had two clients per shift, but they would maybe get their charts looked at twice a term.
Mm.
And so they're not, it's like you're saying, like when you work on a chart from start to finish, you supervise the student from start to finish, you're going through their whole story that they're going through with their client,
right?
And it's connected and it makes sense. And if there's anything that's done poorly or incorrectly, or you want to give them constructive feedback, it's there in the moment. And it's not 3 weeks later when you're looking at a chart and then you finally see the mistake.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. That seems backwards.
It was challenging, and being told that as a support staff, this is your role, don't step outside of it, was very, very challenging, because it wasn't just challenging for me, but the students are missing out because now they're not getting that feedback in the cubicle all the time. You're just pretty much going in and being like, oh, I see you're doing this. That looks awesome. Maybe make sure you bring your shoulders back so you're not so hunched over. And then it just became very like, why am I here?
Right.
And the students need somebody to be not like on them at all times. You want to give them their space so they can discover what kind of therapist they are, but they weren't getting enough feedback. And that's what I brought to the coordinator of the program and the chair of the department, was that there was something lacking in clinic. I wasn't criticizing the curriculum. It was just how student clinic was being run. The students were not benefiting enough so that they could bring that into their profession when they graduated.
So from your observation, were the students, were those students happy with the glorified babysitter, or were the students wanting the supervisor who actually does come in and helps out the way the three of us feel a supervisor should? We can only guess what a student might think, but from what you gather, what do you think those students wanted more of?
So the students that wanted more came to me and said, can you do what you used to do? Can you come in, show me a different way how to do a technique? Can you correct me? Can you fix me? Because I want to grow and I want to learn. But there were a few that were very apprehensive to that approach. And I think it wasn't the job title. They felt like they had really bad anxiety and that made them anxious, and they didn't want to feel embarrassed in front of their client.
Yep.
And I want to respect that. But at the same time, by allowing them to just kind of work without any feedback in the cubicle, they're missing a large part of their education, where they can make mistakes under your supervision so that they don't make that mistake on the public. And you can try to explain that to your best of your ability to the students, but if they don't want it, then it was not within their right, but I couldn't force anything on them.
So if I'm gathering this right, so just so I got the timeline correct, you're there, you're in student clinic, you don't fully understand the job role. You go at the job role the way you've done it before, and you believe that this is the way it should be done.
Which she did, because she was already observing gaps in knowledge after a year
so,
in the program.
So you do that.
Yeah.
And then you have some students saying like, hey, this ain't cool. And they go complain about this whole thing. Then administration says, listen, you can't do this. It's beyond what you're supposed to be doing. And then do you go in the next day and now you just kind of pull back because you have to pull back? You've been told you've been pulled back. Do you go in and tell the students like, hey, guys, what I was doing before, sorry, I was trying to help you out and stuff. I recognize that that's probably not what my role is. This is the new role that I'm going to be doing. This is the way I'm going to be doing things. It's like, is it an announcement or is it just like this silent pullback?
I actually had mediation with one of the students that went to my boss, who like that position doesn't even exist anymore. But at the time she was helping try to organize a program, she went to her and then she called me and we had an hour long conversation of like, you're not a teacher. Think of yourself as a coach. And I'm like, I don't really see the difference, but okay. And then I had to have a meeting with a student and pretty much apologize for what I did and explain why I did it. And then listen to her be like, okay, well, I get embarrassed in front of the client. And then I'm like, okay, I hear what you're saying. I will try to guide you in a way that you feel will be helpful. And so there was no like announcement to the class, but the students where I had gone in and asked them all these questions, they'd be like, I really learned a lot. Can you do that again? Or when you come around, can you show me how like this could be done?
Right.
And it just kind of developed from there without ever announcing publicly that I couldn't actually teach.
Gotcha.
I'm trying to wrap my head around, if you're a coach, there is a level of intervening, no? But was it like, you can say this, you can't say that? Like, was there clear guidelines of like, these are the things you can't, like, for example, if you saw a student doing something that was just blatantly wrong, potentially harmful, would you be expected to intervene there? Okay. But you couldn't go in and start saying like, what's the O and I here? Or what is the action of this muscle? Because that's teaching.
Yes, correct. So okay. even at the private college, you didn't teach anything new in student clinic.
Right.
So they hadn't learned joint play yet. You're not going to teach a student joint play.
Right.
But if they have learned joint play, you can go in and help work the technique with them. You were allowed to do that, but it was very like, I almost felt like I was put into this box and I'd be reprimanded if I did too much teaching. So I kept it as basic as possible. There's only one student that I actually saw potentially hurt a member of the public, but I couldn't instruct to my full ability because I wasn't an instructor. And it was just like going in this stupid circle of like, well, why am I here? And the best part is that there was a faculty member that was supposed to be in clinic to grade the students, but they had 3 hours a week to be in student clinic when student clinic was being run twice a week for 10 hours a day. So how is 3 hours a week enough time to visit all of the students and give them the corrections and the guidance they need? It's being put back on the clinical instructor who can't actually teach. And it just didn't make any sense in my head. And maybe does that make sense to you? I don't know.
I'm sort of like understanding the roles right now, but I actually want to move backwards a little bit and find out when Mark just kind of gave us the synopsis. You notice there's gaps in knowledge. So you're trying to fill these in. So, you know, you are doing teaching to an extent, but teaching things that they should know.
They've already been taught.
If they're working in clinic.
They should know, yes.
Yes. So when you approach the faculty with, this is what I'm noticing in clinic, and this is how I think we could improve clinic, which ultimately would, you know, give you a little bit more of a role. What was the actual response? Was it like, no, we can't do this? Like, were they not willing to listen to you at all? Or did they think that that person who had 3 hours a week to dedicate was enough to fill in these gaps? Like, tell me what the conversation looks like.
So we lost a supervisor and we had a team meeting, and that's when I sent an email to the head of the department, and I told her, like, I'm get really nervous on Zoom. I probably won't ask the questions that I want to ask. So I sent her a list of my concerns, and I had noticed that, just for an example, there was a student who did really poorly in hydrotherapy, and he was putting hot hydrotherapy directly onto a client's body without enough layers to burn the person. He had passed the hydrotherapy component the term before. So if he had passed the hydrotherapy, he should know better and know not to put a hydrochloriter directly on a client.
Right.
And that I brought it up in the email that if we can't teach, then they're not going to fully learn and they're not going to fully grow.
Right.
And I brought up how at a previous school, as an instructor, you got to grade, you got to mark, you got to deduct grades if they did something incorrectly and hurt somebody. And her response back literally was, no, that's not how we're going to do it. This is how it is done here, and we are not going to change. Literally just shut the entire thing down.
In these conversations, is there anything like, listen, I understand what you're doing. I think what you're doing is a good idea. I think it's helpful for the students. I think everyone could learn and grow by this. but this is just not what we do because of the way the jobs are and the job descriptions and everything else. In other words, like, I acknowledge what you're doing is great and I love this idea, but from an administrative red tape standpoint, we just can't have that. In other words, we're recognizing that this is the better thing for the student. Or is it we recognize that this is the better thing for the student and we just don't want to do anything about it?
I don't know if I can answer that question because I was given a reason later and I have a feeling it had to do with like financially because it costs more money to have a full-time teacher in clinic.
Right.
But just being told like, and I was very like passive aggressive, so to speak, in my email. Like I love this program. I love being here. Like I really enjoy working with these students. And here are my suggestions. And this is where I think you're kind of, you're missing a little bit of it. And it was just, nope, we're not, like, I hear you, but no. And it was just shut down. And I wasn't, the only reason I could get was because as a support staff, your job description is this. And teachers, their job description is that. And you're not allowed to mix.
It's so weird to me.
Yeah, the red tape there was a big problem because the students really, the clinic is the time, as Mark said, where, you know, you're finally now seeing real people with real conditions. So you can piece the whole puzzle together. You can do an actual assessment and do your range of motion and do an intake with a person with a real condition, create a treatment for that day, put them on a treatment plan. Like it's finally the time where you get real life experience and you're not going to know what you're doing initially because you've never done this before. You've done all of these made up scenarios in class. You've done, you know, a class where you're doing an assessment, but you're finally getting to put it together. And what? You can't even have a person there who can do more
instruct.
Than coach you. Yeah, you cannot instruct. Weird. So that is very strange. However, I will say that I've only ever worked in a private college. So we didn't have that red tape necessarily. Like all of the staff were kind of interchangeable there. If you were RMT, you were kind of allowed to, you could do the outreach, clinic,
also,
you could do whatever.
Also in addition, the private career college that we were at, we were given a lot of freedom. A
lot of freedom.
Because the administrative staff had full trust in that we had the best ideas for the students and therefore they're really open to like, okay, you think this is a better thing that we can be doing here versus what we actually have laid out here? Can you find a way to put this in informally as long as you still get the job done and perform your role? If you're going above and beyond, like I'm not going to stop you, especially if you feel that is going to be to the benefit of the students, then go for it. You've got our permission to do something.
It would
like
never
that.
Work that way with unions though, you know. Yeah. Your job description matters a lot, especially if it's, yeah, two different unions you're dealing with, right?
Oh, wow.
So
I was constantly being told that they're not learning anything new in student clinic, therefore you are not a teacher. And maybe I think this is why I bash heads with this person so much, is because our definition of teaching, and not from like a union standpoint or job description, but what teaching actually meant was different from where I came from versus where she came from.
Yeah, I feel like if you weren't teaching anything new, then I don't see how you were overstepping. Would that not be coaching to make sure that when the students are working on people that they're doing what they're supposed to be doing, what they've already been taught? You're not reteaching anything. So I'm having a hard time with this too, figuring out what you were and were not allowed to do.
Oh gosh, I'm still confused, and I went through it, and I think where I was most upset is that I went to my union with a private matter, and my confidentiality was not upheld, and I was very hurt by that. Because we're teaching healthcare workers, we're teaching them how to be integral in their care and have accountability for what they're doing. And if the people that are running this program cannot be accountable for their actions and respect my privacy, like I just couldn't be there anymore under that situation.
So the union rep breached confidentiality?
No, the HR member breached confidentiality. So the union rep went to HR to find out more about what the situation was in the massage clinic. But because it's such a small program, they knew who I was, even without disclosing my name. But that doesn't mean that they have a right to come and approach me about it, because it was supposed to be a confidential complaint.
Right.
I can never. I'm so happy I work for myself. Because I can never deal with this stuff, because I'm a solution guy.
Yeah.
I see a problem, or what I think might be a problem, and I want to explore solutions. And the whole point is just to make everything better, right? It's not about an ego. It's not because I want it this way. It's no, because from my experience, I feel like if these things were done, everything else would just be a little bit smoother. And I love the opportunity to try all these things. I can never fucking work ever for anybody else. Like, the more I hear shit like this, the more I'm like, I'm in the right spot.
You're staring at me as if I don't already know this. This is a constant in our life, because he is a solution guy, and when there is any kind of red tape with anything, he goes to me, I don't understand. I'm like, well, it's because this person has to go through this channel, and he goes, no, I get that, I just don't understand why we're not doing it better. And you know, it's that isn't the reality. And sometimes the red tape is there because it needs to be. But in this situation, it sounds like there also might have just been some confusion. Like, I cannot, as I said, I can't wrap my head around, Anne, why you couldn't, if you were allowed to coach, why you couldn't actually make sure that you were coaching these students to be the best that they could be in their student clinic. So I don't understand why you got reprimanded. Yeah, I don't understand why you got reprimanded.
Like, nobody wins in this scenario.
Nobody.
Everyone's a fucking loser in this scenario. So I don't get it. Am I too stupid to understand this stuff? I'm just let's just chalk.
So let me just like go back to like the teaching thing. The reason why I went to my union rep is because I was so confused about what a teacher was allowed and not allowed to do, right, and what support staff was supposed to be doing. Because I've never worked with a union. I had no idea like why my definition was so wrong. So I went to my union rep just to specifically ask, what is support staff allowed to do? Mm-hmm. And what does a teacher do, or what an instructor or faculty member do? And he listened to like the same story that I'm telling you and what I was doing in clinic. And he was the one that actually told me, you are teaching. Like the job description that you were telling me is actually the level of a teacher or a faculty member.
Gotcha.
So my union rep was upset because I was doing the work of a faculty member. And then it just went to HR because HR had to investigate. And then that's where I had the conflict with the head of the department. And even she was told by the union, your support staff are doing the work of a teacher. And she even turned the union down and said, no, you're wrong. They are not teaching. So when you have somebody in like high up in administration who is being told, no, you're wrong by the union, and is still saying no to them, it makes you wonder if it's their ego that's in their way, because they're just not listening to anybody.
I don't know,
man. It's a pretty clusterfuck of a situation.
Well, let's get to the sad story then. The sad story is saw this was a problem.
Everyone fucking loses.
And then everyone failed.
I know. And you know what? When I cried when I found out, because you do not like to hear that anybody that you are instructing, teaching, whatever word you want to use, they fail their exams. Like, they're so excited to be massage therapists, and then they fail their exams. Like, my heart was broken, and I hadn't taught them for months. So it's just like, I did not like to be right in this situation, because my heart was breaking for the students.
So how did you find out about this, you know, giant disaster of a whole bunch of students failing? Like, was it the students that reached out to you to let you know, like, hey, look what happened?
One reached out because they did some more OSCE prep and to do their second attempt. And then one still didn't feel like they had enough information to better prepare for their next attempt. And that's when I found out that everybody had failed.
And so, but like the students were telling you though, that they felt that they were not given enough information, that they were not taught properly. And as I said earlier in the episode, like, you recognized this. So, you know, you mentioned ego. Do you think that the administration just didn't want to hear you? Because as you said, like, it was going to cost money and they just didn't want to get into that. So they essentially forced you out. Like, they weren't giving you any kind of freedom or anything. And, you know, it sounds like they kind of wanted you to leave because you were ruffling some feathers.
Okay. I don't know if they wanted me to leave, but that's what I felt. I was also put in a situation where my union rep wanted me to file a bullying complaint. Mm. And I'm like, I am not getting paid enough to do a bullying complaint with this school. I've got enough stress as it is outside of this school. So I just walked away. And I am very glad that I did. But at the same time, it's the students that suffer at the end. And like, I'm not saying I'm like the best teacher ever, but I don't know. I really wanted the program to be better. I wanted the students to be better. And it seemed like anytime I brought my concerns up, they didn't care. And that's not an environment I wanted to work in. So yes, I was kind of forced out.
It's really weird.
It is really weird. And I know the students had complained as well. And they had written emails to the head of the department being like, this teacher coming to class with PowerPoints that are empty, or the teacher is unprepared. And when students, like, we've all been a student and you always feel like your teacher isn't good enough. Or I don't know, some of the students that I went to school with, they always had something to complain about teacher. The teacher is always wrong. They don't know what they're talking about. There's always those students. This was not the case. I saw their notes. They were actually missing information.
That's what I was going to say. It's one thing if students are saying something because you're students, right? So how credible is this all the time? But when students are saying this and then support staff is also echoing the same thing students are saying, then that's probably when we should take a step back and let's look at this a little deeper. Do you know what I mean? It's coming from two different angles that really have two different incentives, possibly, but they're all saying the same thing. Like, maybe this is something that we should look at a little bit more deeply.
So Anne wouldn't know the answer to this question because, you know, she was forced out, really. But once the sad story happened and people were not successful with their exams, is the school going to listen then? Is the school going to realize there's things missing, or like, is this not their problem?
I hope so. I mean, like, they just got their results. So I think they got their results end of July, beginning of August. So they're already, like, September has already started. They're already a month into the next term. So I don't know if they can just like change from there. Maybe they have. Maybe they started changing last January after I left. Who knows? But if students are still coming to me and being like, my education is lacking and they're dropping tons of money into a college, that should be looked into.
I have these discussions with graduates all the time because we do an OSCE preparation here. And it blows my mind because... And we have the conversation of, because they're always like, my school like just didn't teach me well. And I can't figure it out. I'm like, is it a school that didn't teach you well? Is it the school curriculum that's bad? But how bad can it be? Basically, everyone's rolling off the same type of stuff. So then I'm thinking, are the instructors just poor in that they don't do a good job teaching? Or do they not care? So, for example, they come to me for OSCE preparation, and I ask them, what was the OSCE preparation like at your school? And they would start telling me what they do, and I'm kind of palm in my face type of thing. I'm like, well, why is that even going down like that? To me, it's weird. To me, it's either that instructor doesn't care enough to go gather the information to deliver an OSCE prep that makes sense, that would kind of make a student successful at a licensing exam, or that instructor wants to do this, but they're not permitted to do this because you're given this material and this is how you got to deliver and this is what you got to do. And so I have these discussions all the time, and it just blows my mind because when I do an OSCE preparation, it's not like I do anything that's crazy. It's not like I own any of this stuff. Nothing I do is proprietary. What I do is I gather information from here, from here, from here, from here, from here. I compile it in a certain way that makes a lot of sense, that matches, say, the candidate handbook. And that's where I come up with the material for my OSCE prep. And I'm like, anyone can do this. Your school should be doing this. This is what your OSCE preparation staff, your teacher should have been doing. So I can't figure out if they don't do it because they're lazy or they don't do it because they're not permitted to do so. And now when I'm hearing this, it's making me think a lot of it is maybe they're just not allowed to do the stuff that they want to do.
Maybe. You know what Mark doesn't do during his OSCE prep?
What?
He doesn't teach.
Wait, OSCE prep shouldn't be teaching. Well, okay,
exactly.
Let's not even go to the word teaching right now. But when
he's coaching
the time OSCE prep, you have learned everything. You're just fine tuning it so that you can, I want to, for lack of a better word, deliver it in the right way at your exam.
Absolutely. The way I describe it to the people that come to see me for OSCE prep, I'm like, I'm going to help you with your performance. Think of it like this: you went to school. You're a musician. You're a singer. You went to school and you learned musical theory and you learned how to sing scales and blah, 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 blah. I'm here to teach you how to perform it well so the audience gets really gripped by it. I'm here to teach you how to perform it well so the judges on what's that singing show called? What's that one with Simon Cowell? What's it called?
I don't know.
American Idol.
I don't know.
I'm the one that's there to help you put together performance that the judges or your examiners are going to say 10, 10, 10, 10, 10. Here's the gold ticket. You're going to Hollywood, right? So I'm not teaching you how to sing scales. I don't teach Mariah Carey how to sing scales. I teach her how to put on a good performance. That way she hits all the markers. That way she gets the highest grade possible. So I this type of shit bothers me so much because at the end of the day, no one cares about the fucking student. Nobody. And the people that care about the student are you on the couch and you behind my screen. And you're not at a career college anymore because they treat you like shit. And you're not at that public college because they basically ran you out. And you guys are the ones that actually fucking care. Mm-hmm. It's insane to me. It blows my fucking mind. And the more my mind is blown like this, I also realize that this is just actually how the world works. Do you know what I mean? This is just how everything works. And I don't know how to deal with it most of the time. I'm getting emotional. I don't know how to deal with it most of the time.
This is why you work for yourself. You do things the way that you want to do that's benefiting people. And, you know, I want to say this, like, as I really loved your rant, by the way, but I want to say following that rant, there are some schools that do a
really good job.
Fucking
fabulous
great job. The problem is that if I'm going to private colleges, you know, we've had this discussion before. My issue with private colleges is sometimes that I feel like their focus really is on get more students, get more money, get more students, get more money.
Right.
And then once they're in there, it's like they're not even really ensuring the success of the students. And then I've never worked in a public setting, but from what I'm hearing from Anne is like there's just so many rules because it is a public college. There's so many rules that if you do see a problem, by the time you could probably affect any change, you've had to go through 78 different channels and you're never actually going to see the fruits of your labor. Like if anybody did take you seriously, Anne, and try to go higher up and do something about the curriculum, by the time anything changed, you would have been long gone out of there anyway.
Those students are long gone.
And those students are long gone. So both systems are problematic. Unless you are a school that's actually going to take the time to listen to the people on the ground and really try to make decisions on what's in the best interest of the students. And the craziest part is all of us know if schools were doing that and the schools that are doing that, they're the most successful
exactly.
schools.
They
are the most successful colleges.
It's a flaw in the business model that's happening. It's a flaw in the business model where it's not about the production of good therapists. It's not about the production of good therapists, but a school that takes the time to invest in the students to produce a good therapist, they will reap the benefits of that in enrollment down the road. Mm-hmm. It's that short term. It's like who sat on our couch was talking about schools. It was private career colleges, but they were saying it's like a house of cards and you never know when it's going to cave in. So you're always just scrapping at whatever you can get at that moment in time. And it's a flawed business model.
Mm-hmm.
It just it's weird. I mean, I can't really speak to the public hall just, but all that red tape, man, I'm sweating.
Well,
Well,
I will say, since you started off the episode talking about the Canadian Massage Conference, and as I said, our keynote speaker was Christine Sutherland. So I'll call out Sutherland Chan by name because they do this shit really well. Because the founders of the school, their focus was on, they realized the gaps that existed in learning and how they didn't get enough hands-on experience. And their entire goal was, let's create so many opportunities for students to work with so many different populations, and let's just teach them. And, you know, they, when they were running the school, Christine was very open about this in her keynote. So it's not, you know, this is no secret. Her and Grace were not making any money for years, and they kept doing this passion project really because they cared so much about students' education. And now I'm not saying, you know, go open a school and don't make any money, but if all you're thinking about is the money and not thinking about the outcome, you're not going to make any money anyway. That house of cards is falling. You need to actually put the investment in the students. And if you are outputting successful, effective therapists, then more people are going to, it's all reputation, right? Why do you think Sutherland Chan still exists? Why do you think you say that name and people are like, whoa, they're legendary? Because they cared, and they weren't doing this just to make tons of money.
That was a good speech.
Well, thank you.
So I want to know, how do you feel now?
I feel a whole bunch of things, to be honest. I probably cried for a week when I stopped teaching or instructing or whatever.
Whatever that was, yeah.
Because I love doing it. And there's not many opportunities up here where I am to do that. And when you're kind of, you walk away, like, there's no going back. I can never reapply there. I can never just go and sit down and clear the air and be like, hey, I want to come back. Because it was a shit show when I left. It was not a good ending.
Right.
And like, I've been told by a few colleagues, there's many ways to teach. There's many ways to give back to the massage profession. And I've been having a hard time accepting that. And I am still tutoring. I am still working with a number of students one-on-one. And I love doing that, but I miss the classroom. Mm-hmm. And I'm very hurt that I don't have that opportunity anymore. So feeling sad.
That is very sad, because as Mark said, you're clearly somebody who cares and wants to make things better. And you don't have the opportunity because you're not just going to accept things the way they are, nor should you. I mean, if you're seeing that this was not, the proof is already there. They didn't do well.
Is there any part of you that considered, maybe I'll just play nice in the sandbox, just so I can still be...
Look at her face. No fucking way.
Just so I can still be...
I can't. No. Like, I learned to lower my expectations, right? The higher your expectations are of certain things, you're always going to be disappointed. But when it comes to teaching, your expectations need to be high. And when the people that you work for are letting you down constantly, it's a shitty place to be disappointed, because they're teaching the future of our profession. And I love this profession. I know I just sound like a complete nerd when I say that, but I love being a massage therapist. And when I see that they are not doing their due diligence to these students, and their expectations of the program, I don't know what they are, but they're not meeting my expectations, which are very high. And I was really disappointed. And I don't know. I feel like I lost my train of thought on that one.
What would you have done in that scenario?
In the scenario of, I see there's a problem. I go to administration.
You can't do
anything about it.
You can't do the stuff that you want to do. And there are certain roles at the school, and you don't fit into the role that allows you to do that thing. So stop fucking doing it and just do your job and shut your hole and just do your job.
Can I just go back to, like, our standards of practice for a second?
Yeah.
Like, if we see another member of any health profession doing anything that's not allowed, we have to report it.
Yes, ma'am.
And I feel like that's kind of like why I couldn't let this go, is because they weren't meeting the standards of practice in a way. And that shouldn't be allowed, considering they're the ones in charge of teaching students, and they missed the standard by a long shot. So I reported it, because I just couldn't sit by and let it happen. I couldn't just sit back and let all of this happen because I felt like I wasn't being true to myself. And I wasn't being integral in my profession right. because they were just being like, nope, this is how we're going to do it. I'm not going to listen to you. So they're kind of just being a half-assed school.
Yep.
And that's not okay. And I couldn't just sit back and watch that happen.
I identify with that very well. And that is one of the reasons, a big reason why I walked away from formal education. What would you have done in that scenario?
I would have
done, told to shut your hole.
I would have had to do what Anne did. I mean, I've been in situations where things are just not okay. So the best example I have is when I worked in fitness. I was working for a gym that I felt their practices did not align with my values. I tried having civil discussions with the owners and with, you know, whomever was above me to say, like, I don't like the way things are going here. And I was told exactly as you were, this is how we do things. This is what we do. And it didn't align with my values. And I had to leave because I can't sell something that I don't believe in.
Is there any part of any of you guys that are like, listen, I'm going out anyway. Let me go out in a blaze of fucking glory and do it my way. In other words, okay, I'll say to you, yeah, okay, no problem. I'll play nice in the sandbox. And then when I get in the sandbox, I'm just going to do whatever the fuck I want to do. I'm going to do it to the benefit of the students. And I'm going to, you know what I mean? Any part of you guys would have considered going down that route? Okay, sure. Yeah, I won't teach, no problem. Okay, yeah, I get it. And I'm like, I'm going to fucking quit anyway at some point. So let me just fucking start teaching shit.
Me, probably, yeah. I mean, I think that, I think I've said this before. I got advice from a retired accountant many, many years ago that said, like, if you see something that you feel like needs to be done, or if you think there's something that you want to do, he's like, do it. Like, instead of asking, I can't remember how he said it. It wasn't like ask permission. He was like, do it and deal with the consequences later.
Well, basically, I know what you're talking about. He's like, listen, if you're going to do something and you want to do it, just do it. And you know what? If the hammer comes down on you, that's fine. Just once the hammer comes down on you about 2-3 times, that's probably when, you know what I mean?
Yep.
So in other words, push the boundary a little bit and see what you can get away with. I get what he's saying there.
Mm-hmm.
But I also understand the reasons for you guys just being, because I did it myself. I'm like, I just don't want to be involved in this at all. I don't want my name attached to this.
Yep.
These values do not align with mine, and I just got to get the fuck out of Dodge here. And I feel really bad doing that. I felt really bad doing that because I felt like I abandoned a whole bunch of people. But at the end of the day, when I step back, I'm like, I didn't really abandon anybody. Do you know what I mean? But it did take a while for me to come to that. And for me thinking I abandoned people, I was like, oh, that's kind of weird for me to say. You know what I mean? It's like, I did my best, and then the best was as far as I was able to go the way I wanted to do it, and it just couldn't be done anymore. I don't know. I think I'm talking in circles at this point, but I don't know.
I've had that moment a few times tonight. I wasn't given that opportunity, so I decided to put in my notice in December saying I'm not going to come back in January,
yep.
And they actually paid me out. I wasn't allowed to come back.
Most of the time, I think that's exactly what happened to me. If we're talking about the school, when I did decide to leave the school, I gave 2 weeks notice, right. And I was paid out. I left
well,
that day.
Because at the end of the day, you're replaceable.
Yeah.
And you've already expressed a dislike for what we do, and
yeah.
We don't want that bad blood here. So
yeah, I mean,
let's get
rid
of
you
now.
The other side, I understand it completely, because why would the school want people like myself or Anne there that have already shown like I don't agree with what you're doing? Okay, then leave.
Yeah.
You know,
strategically.
But we're not replaceable. Like, just like how when people don't pass their exam, it reflects badly on the college. It looks terrible when they're constantly reposting the same job because
Absolutely.
They just, like,
you are right.
They just keep losing people. And then you're just going to get the, I don't know.
See, it looks terrible to the rest of the massage community. And it looks terrible to therapists that are mindful of, like, hey, the school's looking for instructors again. Who it doesn't look terrible to is the people that don't know, which is the prospective student, right? No student walks in and says, tell me what your turnover rate is for your instructors. Nobody does that. Right. So a student still goes without knowing any of this stuff.
By the way, as somebody who worked in admissions, there are people who do that.
Well, those are the smart cats.
There's not a lot of them,
but
they
yeah.
exist. And as the person in admissions, I was like, no, not that question.
It really sucks.
It does suck. I mean, like you were saying in your speech, Mark, when you got all emotional, like this is how the world works.
Yeah.
And in some cases, I can understand why. You know, there has to be structure. It can't just be everybody do everything the way they want, but there needs to be some flexibility. There needs to be some sort of like internal review of these kind of things. Like if the students and instructors are saying, hey guys, this isn't working, why is the response, this is how we do it? Like that to me is what is the most insane. And then now that this outcome has come back so poorly, I'm just wondering what's going to be next for them, or if they've decided to make any kind of change. I don't know. And I guess Anne won't really know because she's no longer there.
I always want to know why for things. Like when I'm met with like, this is how we do it, I want to know like, well, why do you do it like this? Especially when you've been given other information and it appears that you don't even want to consider it. Like, why is this not a consideration? Why?
I would like to know that too.
Yeah.
I don't know the why. From a financial standpoint, I feel like it's not even the specific faculty members' fault. They are allotted a certain amount of hours per week per class, and they can't exceed that because then that breaks their union contract. So it falls onto the support staff to fill in the gaps, but their job title is limited. So then the support staff end up doing more and more, get more and more resentful, complain, nothing gets done, and then people leave. And that's not just where I worked. I've heard that from other public colleges, that administration is cutting back on faculty hours, mm-hmm. which puts more work onto the support staff, and it creates that negative feedback loop.
You know, you're just describing education at least
period.
In this
yes.
province, period. Like yep. we see the same thing. We have children in elementary school mm-hmm. and we see the same bullshit there. You know,
yes.
like things that happen that we're both like, why? There's such an easy solution. But the easy solution doesn't work when you're dealing with three separate unions and different titles yep. and yep. hierarchy, and it's unreal the shit that takes place in education, at least in this province.
And that goes back to what Mark says, like that's just how it is. And I think that's bullshit, because the only people that suffer at the end of the day are the students.
Yeah.
And I'm maybe just a bleeding heart, but this stuff just really grinds me the wrong way.
So what's your solution to your situation now?
My solution is just helping any student that comes forward and doing the best that I can to help them. So I have 3 students right now that I'm working with, and you know, maybe that will be 5 in 2 months from now, or maybe it'll be 1 in a month from now. But if someone asks for my help, my door is always open and I'm here to help them however I can.
I think you'll figure this out. This is relatively fresh for you. Like this is all went down in less than a year, but I think that you will figure out a way to keep yourself involved. And I know, like you said, you're in a smaller community, so it's difficult to get back into formal education, but I mean, Mark left formal education for similar reasons as you. And, you know, he's now teaching multiple courses and doing continuing ed and doing tutoring or coaching. He doesn't tutor. I'm sorry I said that, because then people are going to message him and want tutoring. Doesn't tutor. But I mean, he's doing all of these things and still involved in education in a way that he is really making an impact. And I think just hearing you and how passionate you are about this, and you are a little bit of a bleeding heart, You'll figure out a way to get back in and keep yourself involved with students. And it will be more rewarding, because you'll actually get to do things the way that you know is best for them. And there's no red tape. Like you're good to go.
Yeah. I'm going to start crying, because that made me very emotional.
Because it sucks.
It does suck.
But there are people who care. And I've said this in a joking way, but I mean, there's so many gaps in education, in formal education, not just for massage therapy, but that's all I can really speak to at this moment. But there's so many gaps in education. That's why I'm glad there's people who really do love teaching and are as passionate as you guys, because continuing education is where a lot of therapists really figure out who they are and improve on their skills. Like they get I'm not saying that they don't get a good foundation in college, of course they do, but continuing ed is where you really, really step up your game and figure out what your practice is going to be like. And I think that
that's fine if we can get to the point of being a therapist.
Well, and that's the thing is in this case, that didn't happen. And that really, really fucking sucks. Like there's nothing else to say about
that's
that.
That's a good handful of people that now have money out of their pocket or now have some fucking loan that they got to pay back and they got nothing for it in the short term. And they're still struggling to get to where they want to go, which is having a license.
And now they're bitter and angry and their confidence is taking a hit. What would you say to those students, Mark? I'm asking you because you're the guy that's going to get angry. And I'm always the very calm one in these situations.
I mean, for me, I always think there's a solution. I always think that there's always a possibility to get things to work out the way you want them to in the end. The shitty part is sometimes you got to eat the shit to get there. And right now, those students are eating the shit. And when you're eating the shit, it's a very low place to be. And some people don't crawl out of that very easily. And it's really tough. It's really tough. Because I see it all the time.
Yeah.
Because I see all these OSCE people come in. I feel really bad for them because they didn't do anything wrong. Right? Like, how do you go to a school, for example? I did a consultation with someone today who failed the exam twice. 60% the first attempt, 66% the second attempt. And I part of my consultation is, where did you go to school? When did you graduate? And I asked them, what was your average when you were in school? And this person told me I was getting 90s. And I was like, there's a really big disconnect here. How do you score 90s throughout your minimum of 2 years of education throughout massage school, and you can't score a 70 at the licensing exam? There's a really big disconnect here.
Yep.
Massive disconnect. And it is not their fault at all. I'm doing what the school taught me what to do. I put my money and faith in this particular institution to give me what I need to get to this point. And I did everything that they told me to do. And as a matter of fact, I excelled at the things they told me to do. And why can't I get this thing that I need to get? It really fucking sucks.
Yeah, it does. And you know,
no one fucking cares.
I feel they're just passing the students for the sake of passing the students. And it goes back to bums and seats. If the students fail, they're not going to come back and they're not going to give me money. And I saw that at the private level and at the public level. And what was interesting at the private level is the student would fail an exam. They'd go to the director of education. They'd agree this was a failed exam. And then the student would go to the president of the college and he would pass the student.
Yes, I've seen that too. But I'm also talking about students that legitimately I got 90s at school.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like, I remember this one person I did an OSCE prep with. I think she was from Cornwall or something like that. She went to a school out that way. I don't know if she went to school at Cornwall. But she was a valedictorian of her class. She failed her OSCEs twice, not breaking 60%. And she's sitting there going, I have no fucking idea what I'm doing wrong because I'm doing everything that they told me to do. I have no clue. Mark, I know what they taught me. So either they taught me things that don't matter or I'm just a fucking idiot. And we sat down for a couple days. We established that she's not a fucking idiot. And it's when I say no one cares, I just mean like once you've graduated from a place, like you're done.
They've moved on to the next one. Yeah.
Right? There's...
But this is a whole different issue. When you're talking about students who got 90s in school and then fail the exam, this is not, you know, we're pushing students through,
right?
This is that something is a mismatch in the curriculum. And like you were saying earlier, Mark, is this because either the person who's designing the curriculum, the instructors themselves, are they all like, do they just not care? Are they lazy? Like, why are they not giving the students the information the way that it's public knowledge, as you said, this is not proprietary information. Why don't they know how to do this?
Why were there holes? Why were there gaps in the students learning in that school?
I didn't actually know all the teachers.
Okay.
There was one teacher in particular who all the students complained about because their lesson plans actually had like, here's a PowerPoint. Oh, I forgot to finish the PowerPoint, but now I'm teaching it to you. And there's literally missing information. So that's just one particular person. I liked everybody that I worked with, both at the private and the public college. There's just always that one who's just, you know, missing information.
Or teaching wrong. Like, how many students have I've heard people having full-blown arguments with Mark. They come in and they're doing prep with him and he's saying, okay, do this technique. And then they do it. And he's like sometimes he'll even call me. I'm in the office and he'll call me out and he'll say, can you show them how to do this fascial technique? And I'll show them. And they will say to me, I've never seen that before.
Never seen that before. I'm like,
and really? It's something so basic, right? And I'm like, oh, okay. So then they're arguing with Mark saying, this is how I was taught. This is how I was taught. And Mark is trying to tell them, but this is why you failed. Like, I can't say whether or not this is how you were taught or this is how you interpreted it, but it's incorrect. Right. And again, we're not supposed to be teaching, but when they show us something and we're like, where did you even learn that? Like, it's just wrong. So I don't know if it's the students in this case or if there are teachers who are just teaching things completely incorrect. I don't know.
One of the groups that I was teaching, they were the second class coming up. And you could see the ones who learned stuff correctly and were applying it correctly and the ones that didn't. So it was a little bit of both, that the teachers were teaching correctly. And then you always have those students that forget what they learned and now they're in clinic and they're drawing a blank.
Right.
But then where the gap was is that I couldn't instruct them in clinic how to do it correctly.
You can't help them fill in that gap. So it's just
to fill in the gap. So that's where their gaps were, is between the classroom and clinic. You can only learn in class, but you cannot learn in clinic. And it's reteaching or readdressing or redemonstrating how to do something. And that's where the gap was, is there. It was like two completely different programs. They just didn't even match.
I don't understand unions. I never did. Never will. I really don't. I don't. I can't operate in the real world.
The real world.
But you know what? Solution. You love your solutions. A great solution would have a full-time teacher in the student clinic.
That seems, makes the most sense.
Seems like it makes sense.
The pay difference between a teacher and a support staff is about $65 an hour. So somebody up there is trying to save money. So you have support staff who get paid, like, it was decent, but in comparison to what the teachers are making, we're talking about a $60 difference. That's huge.
Yeah.
And a kind of a slap in the face.
Yeah. So this does come down to money, I guess.
Money.
Yeah.
And that's speculation. I don't know that for certain. That's just from my experiences. But it seems like at the end of the day, they didn't want to put the money forward to have the proper people there. And now it's the students that are suffering. And again, that's speculation.
What's the order of the emotions? Is it anger first? Or is it disappointment first? Or is it sadness first? What's the
order? In this moment, I'm angry.
When all of this is going down, what's the order of the emotions? I'm curious. And if any of this is like too much, just be like, Mark, fuck off.
No, I'm at the end of the day, I am really sad because I've lost an opportunity to do something that I love. So above all else, I'm hurt and sad and then disappointed and then angry.
Not cool, man. Not cool. Not cool. I will say thank you for coming to talk about this because I know you're still feeling all of this shit. But thank you for talking about it. And again, like, I know I already said this and it doesn't have to be said. This is not all schools. We're talking about one therapist experience, but also just to like get people thinking about these sorts of things. Like, we should care about the education. You know, you see a lot of people complaining about, you know, my client said they went to this therapist and they were told this, 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 and people get really passionate and angry when they hear therapists like spewing nonsense. But then you start hearing these stories of, you know, what's happening in schools. I'm like, well, there might be a reason that there's people spewing nonsense right now.
Even walking away from this, I still respect the staff that I worked with. They were very intelligent. There was just miscommunication and a disconnect.
Yeah.
You're a better person than me. I'd be just constantly angry.
I like seeing the good in everybody, even if sometimes they're assholes.
You're a better person than me. That's for fucking sure.
Well, on that note, he looks like he's still thinking, but I think we can wrap it up here and let Anne go back to living and not having to relive this nonsense.
Yes, I know.
No, you know what? It was really good to talk about it. It was really good to talk about it. I hope it. The story all made sense in the end.
It does, and you will continue to have an impact on future RMTs. No matter where you spread your brilliance, you'll always have that impact. That's for sure.
Those are some nice words.
Well, it's true. I only speak the truth on Thursdays.
What about Fridays?
Fridays are fucking Fridays. Everything goes out the window. If we recorded this tomorrow, it'd be a whole other story.
Great to have you tonight.
I just feel.
Mark hit his wall because I keep looking at him like, "Are you going to wrap up the episode?" And he just looks back at me. I think he forgets that that's his part.
No, it's
you've hit the tired wall.
I'll cut all this shit out. I fucking can't stand it. I can't stand it because, like I said, I'm a solution guy. And to me, there are some simple fucking solutions. But because there's some weird fucking regulations and rules and all that shit, that we can't button this whole thing fucking up really fast and just make everybody happy at the end of the day. It's not like you're asking for extra pay. Right? It's not like it's not like you're going to cause a problem with the union. It's not like you're going to cause a problem with the college. It's not like you're going to the labor board. All you want to do is help fucking students. That's all you want to fucking do. So it drives me insane that you can't even do something you're volunteering to do because of all this other shit. And your volunteering to do it is going to be nothing but a benefit to everybody else. It blows my fucking mind. And this is why things just never get done anywhere. Mm-hmm. Right? It's like Amanda brought up just education in general. There's teachers at our kids' elementary school that I know want to do above and beyond what they're supposed to be doing, or when they're on work to rule. They want to do more stuff, but they can't. And who suffers from that at the end? The fucking kid.
Yep.
Right? And it's a simple fucking solution. You want to do it? Go for it. You want to work within the confines of your job description? Fucking fine. Go for it. I don't get it. It doesn't make sense. I can never operate in this fucking world ever like that. I can never work for somebody else. I can never. Because none of it ever makes sense to me.
No.
And you know what? Good on you for fucking walking away. And good on you for going to do something else. Because the actual movers and the shakers in any fucking industry are not the ones that follow the fucking rules. None of them. None of them. Mm-hmm. So good on you, man. And I'm going to keep that shit in there.
Keep it in.
Right on. Thank you for hanging out. Thank you for sharing. I appreciate
it. Thanks for having me.
You guys have been listening to Two Massage Therapists and a Microphone. Peace.